ain't going to that. And now I'm here, and it's very, very affirming, and it's resonant with my beliefs in life.
All right, can you name one pivotal activity that occurred last year that really had a profound influence on your life? When you came to your first retreat?
Influence.
Or just touched you in a special way?
Okay, that's a better word for me, because without, at the risk of sounding like a know-it-all, which I'm not, this is a African-centered living and discussion is something that's everyday thing for me, and Adoti is just resonant with that way of being that I have. But what particularly moved me was when I heard the story last year, differently from this year. There was a film strip presentation on the history of the organization, and one of the founding brothers said the reason that I was driven to implement Adoti was because the white gay model and the white gay frame of reference was not doing it for me. It was not fulfilling me. It was not feeding me. And I feel like I needed something else. And Adoti was going to be something that was going to be African. And I assumed that was the case why this thing was started. But I heard it concretely from a brother who has since passed in terms of what his intention was in developing Adoti. So that was very moving for me. And in terms of anything else, it's hard to put a finger on one thing, because just being among a bunch of black, same gender loving men who have made a commitment to love each other and who are into it, you know, who are activated by the idea of being safe among their brothers or safe in their brother's arms, that in itself is just moving through and through, and, you know, there's no beginning and no end. Just that you're in that space and that intention, for me, is very, very moving. Because in the world that I live in, which is not up on a hill in Adoti, it's a very vicious place. Mm-hmm. It's a very confusing place full of brothers and sisters, but we'll focus on brothers for the sake of Adoti, who are just out of their minds in many ways, fragmented, split apart in terms of who they want to take care of, who they want to nurture, which is often not themselves.
It's okay, take your time.
When you don't, this is how I feel. I keep generalizing, but this is how I felt. When I kept searching, but when you don't get the things you, or this one thing that you're searching for, or all these things don't fill that void that you have inside, then you really sit down, and some people get frustrated, and I got frustrated, and sometimes you do things or you come bitter. You know, we all act out in different ways. And then I think it's a blessing. Sometimes I think God put people in our lives to guide us to a right path. And sometimes if you're ready for it and if you're not ready for it and what have you, or if you listen. And I think Ativa, that's the guy who really came to my life 12 years ago, was really sent to, like, guide me that way. You know, our relationship has always been spiritual, mm-hmm. and taking care of physical and spiritual self.
Okay.
And last night was great. Just somebody hands on me, and you know, you're blindfolded, and you just feel these pair hands on you, and you have your hands on someone, and the comforting, the feeling of peace of mind. That's what I'm gonna say. Peace of mind, even though you're going up, you don't know if, you know, I guess the concern was not if I was going to fall, but the touch was a feeling. Then going up the hill and hearing the voices, the strong, deep voices singing, hearing the wind, the trees, you know, when this hand is on you, and all this is going, all the sensation is going around in your mind, the hands on your shoulder, the brothers' voices singing, like calling, you know, waiting on us, excited for us, and just excitement of the celebration that they're happy that you're here, the acceptance, you know, you just, then when you get there, the power of their presence, their voice, the unity. You know, we're coming, we're submitting ourselves to this circle. It's like, you kind of like, you like, okay, yes, I accept this, I want this, please accept me. And I know it sounds weird, but it's very sexual in a way. It's passive and it's aggressive at the same time, the whole ritual, when you think about it. You know, here come the newcomers, submitting to the old members, and the old members are, yes, we accept you.
Yeah, and it was like, it could be like sex in another sense that it's very spiritual.
Yes, it's very spiritual, and it's a great sensation, and you go around and you just feel safe, the peace. It's just like, and then you feel the warmth when we're there in a circle, and the warmth of the fire, the crackling. I heard certain brother voices in the background. You feel or you hear the sincerity in their voice, the power, and the unity, and that's what that power is.
Go ahead and share.
Oh, but anyway, God. Anyway, when I was about eight, 9 years old, I was like in the fourth grade or something like that. I had fallen in love or fallen in profound like and attraction to other males or boys my age before that, but this one was particularly significant because boyfriend flowed out of my mouth and out of my being, boyfriend. And I'll give you some context. When I was in fourth grade, there was this guy named Lawrence Green that I thought was the beginning and the end. I thought he was absolutely stunning, a beautiful young brother. And we were good friends, and I was still subjectively naive at the time to think that all boys felt the same way I felt, because I didn't come from a family that made a conscious effort to give us homophobic ideas. Not because it was pro-homosexual, not, it just had other things on his mind.
Okay.
So I want to give that impression, but it wasn't. I've heard that people have profoundly, actively homophobic guardians in their lives that helps to teach them to hate themselves. I didn't have that. And one day I asked Lawrence, after being his friend and watching him play baseball and just being in awe of his very being and just being totally in love with him, I asked him to come over to my house for dinner. He asked him for permission, went to my house for dinner. And when I, on my way home, my sister, we ran into my sister at the clothesline. There were these T type of clotheslines where there's two T's on it.
Yes. Yeah. Now, give me location. Okay. Where are we?
We're in
L.A.?
We're in South Central Los Angeles, Watts.
Okay,
Watts.
All right.
And my sister was sitting on one of the T's, on the two T's that hold uh-huh. the clothesline. She was chewing the heck out of some strawberry bubble gum. And she's a year younger than me. She was like 7, and she was swinging her legs under the T. And she said, "Who is that?" Because I rarely have ever brought anybody home from school. So my little sister said, "Who was that?" As she chewed the heck out of this gum. And I said, "This is Lawrence." And I'm serious. It flowed out of me like water or like breath. I said, "This is Lawrence. He's my boyfriend." And my sister, who came from the same family as I, was not homophobic yet either. And her response to it was not homophobic at all. It was more like, what do you call it? Competitive. There's a word for it between sibling rivalry. It was more like she had more of a sibling rivalry, like, "So what? Tomorrow I'm bringing my boyfriend home too." That's all she said. She kept chewing her gum. But Lawrence tripped. Okay, I mean, she and I didn't trip, Lawrence was like, he didn't want to embarrass me, I guess, or embarrass himself, because me and my sister were so natural with this. So he didn't say nothing, but I watched him have a noticeable reaction to, out of the blue, being called a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So when we got into the house, as we walked up the stairs to play with my toys, he said, kind of in a soft voice, he said, "So I didn't know that boys could be boyfriends." And his reaction wasn't disgust and nothing like that. It was like shock, like, "Huh, like I didn't know that boys could do that." And I was all in my little arrogant, like, "Yeah, well, they can, you know." "I thought you knew, you know what I'm saying?" "I thought, yeah, well, they can, you know." Then we went upstairs, we played, and I was all aglow because Lawrence was in my bedroom, clipping my toys, and I always wanted him there. And there he was. But he was slightly distracted, not reactive in a major way because he kept on playing with toys and stuff, but he was distracted throughout the evening by this boyfriend comment. And we had dinner finally, and my little sister, who was sitting across the table, who knew that Lil was my boyfriend, was giggling and teasing and pointing and like you know, "Cleo's boyfriend is here," type of thing. And I remember not being self-conscious at all, just loving having my boyfriend at the dinner table.
Mm.
So finally, nighttime came. My mother suggested that it was time that Lawrence go home, because I had to go to bed and he had to go to bed. Unfortunately, not together, but at his house. So we got into the car, and I was just, even though I could see Lawrence's being distracted. I was more trying to concentrate on the fact that we had consummated our relationship and that we had been in each other's house and played with toys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just through. I mean, you know, just full and just excited about it. So I figured, I had this assumption that, okay, well, now it's clear that he's my boyfriend. From now on, we don't have to act like this is not the case anymore. So we got to his house. And he opened the back door, and I opened the back door, and we got out. And he ran up to his door, and I said bye to him and got into the house all excited. And the ride home with my mother was relatively quiet. You know, some music was playing, and she knew I was happy. She just knew I was aglow. She didn't know the explicits of why necessarily. And I didn't care either, frankly. I just was happy. That's all I knew. So the following day, I didn't get no sleep all night. I just, you know, I couldn't contain myself. So the following day, I saw Lawrence. I got to school. Lawrence was already there. He was sitting in a chair in front of me. He wasn't in front of me. He was sitting in a chair in the front of the room. Both of our chairs were in the middle of the room. He sat in front of me, and I sat behind him, and he was always there for me to play with the back of his head and mess with him during class, but he wasn't there no more. We had assigned seats, and he was in the front of the class, and I still was in my class, my seat in the middle. I thought that was odd. And I remember walking past him and looking at him and waving at him, and he didn't smile or nothing. He just looked up at me, and my heart started to get a little bit of a pierce, but I still didn't want to go there, so I didn't let it get too pierced. I said, now something happened, I don't know about it, or whatever, we'll figure out at lunchtime. So when lunchtime came, we had our place where we sat all the time in the cafeteria, and he sat there, and, you know, and I sat here. He wasn't there. And I looked around, and I figured maybe he had the nurse's office or something peculiar happened there. Maybe he's a little bit sick. I had all my little romantic excuses that had nothing to do with me, hopefully. So I finished my lunch really quickly because there's no reason to stay there now because he wasn't there. So I went out the cafeteria and by the baseball field. There he was with his little brown bag eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He was all by himself, and I went over there. I remember my heart feeling really heavy as I walked toward him because this was such a break in our routine. A routine that lasted for months and months and months. I mean, this is not just weeks here. We're talking about a long time. So I went over to the cafeteria, to the tree, and I said, "What's up, Lawrence?" And he said, "My mama said I can't play with you anymore." And I said, "Why?" He said, "And the teacher knows, and she told the teacher, and the teacher knows that we're not supposed to play together anymore, and we just can't." I was through. You could have just shot me. Because I said, "Why?" with all these tears getting ready to come out of my face, and he never gave me an answer. And of course, I had enough sense even then to figure out what it must have been about, because I had enough sense to reminisce on what occurred before this weird event of us not talking and his mother, blah, blah, blah. So that was devastating. That was my first heartbreak. And from that moment on,
Let's see. My first love. This took place when I was fairly young. I was about 13, 14. And at that age where I was growing up, it was one of those situations where everybody had, like, a best friend. And my particular best friend, when I first moved into the area, I became friends with this guy named Ronald. And just to give you a little background on Ronald, you know how in every neighborhood there's always this one guy that's real popular, can do no wrong, seems to be great at everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was Ronald. Okay. I mean, good looking, he was smart, he could, you know, he was good at sports, the whole nine yards. So in actuality, I was kind of surprised, and we became best friends. Nevertheless, I enjoyed it, and that was good. Now, one of the things regarding Ronald was that he had this habit of, like I said, he was real popular, so he can get away with things that most people couldn't get away with. So, like if he had this habit of, if he would beat you at something, he would, like, sort of kiss you on the forehead, and that was just his way of punctuating what, you know, his win. So what happened was, you know, after a while, when he would do that, you know, I began to realize that, hey, I kind of like when he did that. And so I said, so I would let him win more often than really necessary. And then one day I just decided that I was going to, I was going to do the same thing. So I always, like, we used to have these, like, wrestling matches, and I always knew I could beat him, but I used to let him beat me. You know, subconsciously, I knew I could do it. So this one time, I just decided to do it, and I beat him, and so then I pecked him one in the forehead like he used to always do to me. So then we would, you know, do that for a while, and we'd, like, back and forth. So this one day, he did that, and he went to... No, I beat him, and I went to peck him on the forehead, and he moved his head, so I ended up kissing him. So that really...
You think he did that on purpose?
Yes. Okay, I didn't think so at the time. I didn't, you know, I wasn't going there. But then what happened was we wrestled again, and this time he won. I wasn't taking any chances. So he won, and but this time... He just kissed me. He didn't. It wasn't like the peck on the thing. He kissed me on the lips. So then we do it a little more, and then we, you know, we'd wrestle and we'd kiss afterwards. Mm-hmm. So then it got to a point where we stopped wrestling. We just started kissing. So then this progressed for a while, and it would get to, like, you know. Like, we'd get together and we'd have these marathon kissing sessions. So that went on. And what would always happen to, is, you know, we'd get together and we'd do that, and it just sort of progressed for a while. And then after a while, you know, it progressed a little further than that, which was good, and everything was going along great and everything. But then what happened was... this one day we had a fight about something, and what tended to be the nature of our relationship is, like, if we'd have an argument or fight about something, I would generally just give in, and that would be it. Well, this one day I just decided I wasn't going to give in. I wanted him to give in. And so we had, I don't even remember what we fought about, but it was just one of these things. We had this argument, and so I didn't give in, and he didn't give in, and we just kind of broke up. And then what happened was, like I said, it was, like, sort of traditional that everybody, like, had best friends. So, like, other people would try to get me to be friends with him, but, you know, I really just wanted to get back together with him. And but what I didn't know at the time was, while this was going on, it turned out that his parents were going through a divorce. And so right around the same time that happened, and he and his, like, his mother and the kids moved somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
So we kind of lost contact, which sort of further separated the situation. When we returned to school in the fall, like, he went to the same school, but... He was living someplace else, and we had different classes and stuff, so we really didn't get together that much.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of never got back together, because then I moved and things happened like that.
Mm-hmm.
I subsequently, later on, I found out that it turns out that he was always... sticking up for me and protecting me. Like, he would get in fights if somebody said anything about me, and I never knew all this was taking place. And so it really, like, when I found out, I felt, you know, I felt bad, and I similarly would not never, like, really be close friends with anybody else, because I just didn't want it to affect our friendship. Mm-hmm. Figuring that at some point we'd just get back together. Well, you know, time passed and that didn't happen. Later on, I came to realize that the relationship that I had with him sort of clouded over all other relationships that I had.
In what way?
In that I was always kind of trying to recapture that closeness and that that level of intensity and togetherness with someone else. Also, in that, because of that, for a long time, I would not open myself up emotionally to other people. Because I was really hurt when it kind of ended, and even though it may seem like, because by the time it ended, we were like 15, 16, something like that. And it seems like you're really young, and that's what I, you know, in my mind, just thought it wasn't any big deal to it, but then I've come to realize that it was significant, and I was still measuring other people and things on that I, and you know, in some ways, even like found that, like, you know, being attracted to that personality type, and you know,
what kind of personality type?
You know, just very independent, kind of. You know, the natural-born leader type, that kind of
awesome.
Thing. And though I think at this point in my life I've changed, I do still recognize that it was a big part of, or had a big effect on how I looked at relationships and people and things like that.
And the man you were attracted to.
Right.
Just a little bit about... can you kind of talk about what it was that you loved about him?
I think what I probably loved about him was the fact that I think he knew me as I was and loved me as I was. You know, that
no
I think...
But I
and when was the first time you were in love?
The first time I was in love came years later. The first time I was in love, I was 26.
Okay.
And yeah. But what about that too?
You don't want to share it with
me? Why don't I share it to you? These stories are so thorough. I mean, you know, they're so long and drawn out.
But don't you? They're important.
Okay. Well.
Don't you think they're important?
You've
written about them.
You heard about that too? You didn't read about that.
Which are the 26-year-old L.A.?
L.A.
No. You know, you were in somewhere else. Were you in another state?
No, I don't think I mentioned the state.
Okay.
But it was in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll give a summary of that, because you can review the materials if you've seen them already. And frankly, it's a painful story to
tell.
Yeah,
I know it is.
It's. I mean, I haven't had relationships since, so it's the wound... in some ways, it's kind of still gaping for me.
Okay.
There's been nothing that has filled that space
since,
and I wish there were, frankly. But that's another story. Because he passed now, about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, to make a long story short, we met at it was as corny as it's gonna sound and as cliche as it's gonna sound. It was great attraction, if not love. It was great attraction and adoration. From first sight, I thought he was just the finest thing that ever graced the planet. And he was about your complexion. He was so beautiful. He was just so beautiful to me. Big brown eyes and a smile that just could knock trees down. Just a big, gorgeous smile and big brown eyes. Just a beautiful black brother. And at,
go ahead. It's still going.
We met at in a kind of context which people tend to find me, which is in some kind of social, political, action-oriented thing for black men who love men, or for people of African descent, regardless of sexual expression or gender focus. Anyway, I'm about to summarize this. We met. We went out. I didn't, even though I liked him from the first time, I still, even at 26, had my issues around straight up telling somebody that I liked him. I was very afraid of that or of rejection. So I didn't tell him nothing for a year. And finally, he was in the midst of creating a telephone directory for Same Gender Loving Brothers of African Descent. And he needed everybody's phone number. And he needed to give everybody else's phone number so they can call him and give him information on how to compile this book. So that was under the guise of that is how I got his phone number, and he got my phone number. And I remember getting his phone number, cherishing it like it was a precious diamond and making sure I wasn't going to lose it. If you lose stuff, so I wasn't going to lose this. Mm-hmm. And I put it deep in my pocket. And when I got home, I just took it out and found a place. Like, I had a big, large crystal paperweight. And I put it under the paperweight on top of my desk. I wasn't going to lose that. But I was scared to death to call him, so I didn't call him until maybe 4 days later. I said, I'm calling him. Scared to death. And I called him. Now, one thing that's different about this situation than it was with Lawrence and the others, that I knew he was the same gender lover. Mm. There was no doubt. You know, I knew he was a brother who loved brothers. So I didn't know how he felt about me, but we talked, and New Year's was coming, and after me attempting to survive the conversation, because I was surviving, I was so nervous. Finally, we talked. I came up with the idea of maybe I was going out. To my shock, he agreed, and he took me to this wonderful restaurant. We stayed together for 5 days straight after that experience, that going of New Year's, this wonderful restaurant.
It was New Year's, right?
It was New Year's, and we had New Year's together, and I was in heaven. I was in absolute joy. I was a mess, a wonderful mess of just elatedness. And we spent 5 days together. We didn't go to work. We didn't do nothing. We just in each other's face. And finally, five days later, we both said, we got to be responsible here. We got jobs and stuff. And we finally went to work and commenced having lunch and dinner every day and spending at each other's house every day. Finally, about 3 months, 3 or 4 months later of intensity and wonderfulness, we decided to live together. And the long story short, he had AIDS, full-blown AIDS. I didn't know. He didn't tell me. That got really dramatic with his family, all kind of stuff that I won't get into right now. Again, I'll submit you the story if you don't have it already. And we were separated by the complications that came with that. His family not wanting him with me. His family not knowing that I didn't know that he had HIV and that he had AIDS. I did not know he had AIDS. There was all this stuff going on, this drama that I did not understand, and we wound up breaking up. I was devastated, brokenhearted, lost 36 pounds because I didn't eat for weeks and weeks and weeks until I was forced to by very, very concerned associates and friends. And that was my first love. Mm-hmm. And again, I've edited for time and preventing pain purposes. That's why I write stuff down and say, look, you experienced that. I don't want to go there. That's one reason why I tell stories. Because I think that the story has teaching in it and power in it in terms of what we go through, but I don't want to keep telling it, so I write it down.
Okay.
But that was my first love. I was in love. I was in otherworldly love.
But, my first actual, when I was attracted to a man, or a boy, was when I was in second grade. Do you believe that? His name was David. I remember him very well. He had a little gap in his tooth. And when we lined up for second grade, you know how you line up and stuff? We used to hump each other.
Uh-huh.
And people say, what y'all doing? And it was like, nothing. But I was so aroused, and we used to hold hands and things like that. I mean, I don't know. That was my first one. I had a real crush on David, and we just couldn't separate. And he didn't live in my neighborhood, and we were too young, like, to travel, like, that far away to mm-hmm. visit each other. So school was, elementary school, the second grade was it.
It was
the only time when we get our little freak on.
What about your full sexual encounter? Your full sexual encounter with another man?
That happened with a cousin.
And how old were you? How old were you?
Oh God, maybe 11 or so. And it was like no penetration, no oral sex. It was just like, you know, the rubbing, just rubbing and that type of thing, naked mm-hmm. down in the basement. At one of the family gatherings. What your boys doing down there? Nothing. You know, we're over behind the cellar. You know. Yeah, that was my first. I think that's sexual.
Mm-hmm, it is.
It's very sexual. That's my first. But just one day, my first sexual experience, the real, like, knowing that was happening, it's not until I was 19. And that was actually with a white man who cruised me at my mother's job. And very nice, very relaxing, like, wanted to go out to dinner. And I, you know how you kind of know, but you are denying in your mind, but you kind of know what's going on. But we went out to dinner, we talked, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, gave me compliments and everything, of course, you know. Because I grew up in a Catholic church being damned to hell every week. Yeah, it was kind of like a low self-esteem and opinion of yourself because these thoughts you think that is horrible. Mm-hmm. And that you're a sinner and that you're no good, you're weird, you're a freak. So this white man was like what I related to because he kind of knew.
Yeah.
I didn't know any brothers or, you know, I ain't very sheltered. I didn't know that there was other black men. But I didn't do anything to him because I just thought it was like totally gross. And you know, get real personal here. He wanted me to penetrate him, and I have never like penetrated anyone. And I was just like real stupid about it. You know, I was just like, you want me to stick this in that little hole? Isn't it gonna hurt? You know? And so, he was like, yeah. So it was like freaked out for me, you know. He kept trying to get me to do these things, and I wasn't totally comfortable with them. Or maybe it just was him. But anyway, we saw each other like 3 or 4 times, and he was just trying to make me see him more and what it was. He wanted me to be a lover, which I didn't know the terms of anything like that. That's all I knew. I was horny, and once I got off, I was out of there. That type of thing. And I still couldn't relate to him on anything, any level. But after a while, I met the first guy that I was comfortable doing those type of things with, and that still took work. And that wasn't until I was like 21, 22. And he was just refreshing because he introduced me to his friends. You know, I met his friends with other black men. And great. Just like, oh, I'm not weird, I'm not a freak, you know. It don't have to be with a white guy. Because in my house, it was a white thing. It wasn't like a black thing. You know, our boys don't do that kind of stuff. Those white boys do that freaky stuff. That's what I used to hear from my parents, my grandfather. And so, after being with him, you know, for a while and meeting people, everything fell in. And he introduced me to, and exposed me to a lot.
And so how long were you guys together?
About 2-3 years.
And I think I'm going to be safe and all right.
Now, if there was one sentence, one phrase, one word to describe your experience here, what would it be?
Well, I think this is the third time, and this is just my personal. It's a wonderful thing. I keep saying that over and
that's
over
all right.
And over, but that's what I feel. It's a wonderful thing. It's the spirit. It's the spirit. It's nothing you can grab, nothing you can look at, but it's definitely something you can feel. Mm. It's what's guiding me. That's what's allowing these tears of joy. They came. They began tears of sorrow, but they're actually tears of joy because it's unresolved shit that's going on or has been going on. It's coming to a closure and I'm stuck in the mud anymore. I've learned how to lift up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned that I don't have to stay in.